is The Sidebar, the podcast series from Soulsides. I'm your host, Oliver Wang, and today, another in-studio guest here in South Pass is Michael Barnes of KPFK's The Melting Pot, though me and Michael met back at during our KALX days up in Berkeley, so this is kind of two old radio college radio veterans chatting it up, though this is sort of inverted because I've often have covered or been on your show at KPFK, and now I get to turn the tables and make you my guest. But in any case, good to see you, Michael.
It's good seeing you too, man.
Talking about radio, I want to start with just what is it about the medium that attracts you? I mean, you've done, at this point, you've worked for at least three radio stations that I can count. KALX, you were at KCRW for a spell, and now for, what, about the last year or so, you've been at KPFK?
Yeah.
You know, in a day and age in which everyone thinks terrestrial radio is on its way out and it's all about the internet, da-da-da-da-da, you still like radio. What is it about it?
I don't know. I think part of it is just, you know, we're both sociology guys too,
right.
And so like I spent a lot of time thinking about Pierre Bourdieu and this concept of habitus and trying to kind of understand exactly kind of how you get to the place that you are based off of your own past and kind of social history that you get from other people or from your family. And you know, I don't know exactly when love affair with radio started, but it was pretty early on, just as a kid. I mean, that was a way that I learned about music and all kind of varieties of music growing up in Atlanta, which had really, especially back in the 1980s, early part in the 90s, had a really good commercial and non-commercial radio landscape.
As did many cities at that time,
a lot of cities had really good radio.
Right.
And Atlanta had, you know, non-commercial stations, had two college stations out of Atlanta, WREK and WRES, also a college jazz station, WCLK, community station, WRFG, really good rock stations and decent R&B urban stations. And in the middle part of the 80s, I guess, started getting oldies stations too. And so it was just this really wide variety of sounds, and so much of the way that I like so many different kinds of sounds comes very much from all those different varieties of really good radio programming that was up then. But when I went into college, I wasn't thinking about going into radio, you know, because I love radio. I mean, I wanted to go into radio, really be a sports broadcaster.
Really?
Yeah, because I played baseball through most of my life, and when I got into college was about that time where it was like, this is not going to happen professionally, but I wanted to stay close to the sport, and so I was just thinking about doing broadcast journalism, and Georgia State had this really exceptional radio station, WRES, Alm 88. And so I just was really interested, at least consciously, was interested in kind of doing sports radio, but loved so many different things about popular music that just kind of ended up being a much more natural fit.
Has it changed your relationship to music in particular, being on the other side of the broadcast signal, in other words?
Yeah, I think that when I got to Album 88, I thought that I knew a fair amount about music, and being in contact with a lot of other people, especially the hip-hop DJs who worked there, made me understand that I really didn't know anything at all. And also, at that time at least, I haven't been there in, 13 years now, so I don't know if they still have all that vinyl hanging around. But they, you know, kind of true to their name, had a lot of vinyl records around and had kind of the bread and butter college radio 80s and 90s kind of rock stuff. But then kind of in the other rooms was what was left of their jazz collection, really great like psychedelic rock and 60s soul. And so that stuff was kind of there, but it was there only for people who actually were interested in figuring out what these piles and piles of records that were just stacked to the top that everybody had forgotten about what they were about. And I was really, really interested in figuring that out. And so it was a thing that really, that kind of added with just being in that particular period of time, the mid-1990s into the later 1990s was that period of time where you really started getting many more compilations, collections that were focused on like rare grooves and things that people had sampled. And so just kind of understanding where all these building blocks of a lot of the music that I liked, where it actually came from, mm-hmm. got me kind of searching for different things. And so like, I had really diverse tastes going into college radio, but nothing like I do now. And I learned so much more both from kind of being on the radio and wanting to present, not just the same old thing,
mm-hmm.
Every time or with the different shows that I was working on, but also just the different people and characters and other DJs that I met and their tastes and you know, seeing their collections and listening to them, that all those things really just expanded it.
You are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, and all over the world at kpfk.org. Once again, time for Melting Pot. I'm your usual host, Michael Barnes. We're here every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. and have been here for just a little over a year. So celebrating our one-year anniversary, which I think is just what we're going to do here.
Now, you started your show, The Melting Pot, on KPFK about a year ago. What was your concept going in with it?
I really actually wanted to do something sort of similar to what it used to do on Calix in Berkeley. A lot of community radio, college radio is very, very kind of block format focused. And a lot of the shows, like I did jazz shows. I did like a soul show. I did a punk show, a blues show, but never like a soul, blues, punk, jazz show.
Right.
That kind of thing. Some people, at least at Calix, kind of found like the way that they define their diversity mandates kind of a drag.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it was like my head was already there in like multiple genres and different spaces. So it was actually really, really nice. And just having that ability to play whatever it was that you felt like playing at any moment was really, really freeing. And so it kind of allowed me to bring up a lot of different connections. And so I just tried to kind of focus that, I think, a little bit more, not quite as freewheeling. Like those Calix shows, like I never planned out those shows. Mm-hmm. I had maybe one song to start with and that was it.
Yeah.
And it was just total seat-of-the-pants radio. Also, the thing with KPFK, like, they don't really have a working library anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so it also kind of forces me to really concentrate and focus on kind of what kind of show I want to produce, what kind of sounds I want to bring out. And with only 2 hours, which for me is a really short amount of time, feels like a really short amount of time for me. You know, I have to be really, really cognizant about what I'm actually going to play from week to week. And so those kinds of things, trying to find all these different connections in various styles of music, and the concept of the melting pot just seemed to fit very nicely, trying to melt all these different styles together, see the different connections, and be able to kind of present a show that on paper sometimes doesn't necessarily seem like it would make sense, but I hope that when people listen to it from beginning in or even set to set, that there's a kind of sonic connection between things.
I apologize for going on a tangent here, but I did have Matthew Africa on the sidebar, the very first show, and we talked about him going through the process of selling his records. And one story I know about you is that when you got married about 7 years ago, you actually sold off the bulk of your collection to pay for your wedding. Do I have that right?
It did not pay for the entire wedding.
Okay.
But it paid for a lot of it. And I never had I never had quite the serious collection that you have surrounding us right now. But I had a solid collection, and it was probably, at the time that I started selling stuff off, it was probably a good, like, 2,500 records.
Okay. I have to ask this. I love my wife, but I'm thinking if I had to sell my records to pay for our wedding, you know,
I don't know if
that's
you want,
love, baby. That's love.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to keep that in the final cut right there. It was like a hard decision for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I heard a story like Kep Darge, like way back in the day, like sold a bunch of his stuff, but that was happening in a period of time where he and a few handful of other people only knew where to get that stuff, and it's like,
that probably was a thing that I thought about the most, was just what are the chances of me actually being able to track down the better records, like the records that went to Cool Chris.
Yeah.
Like, am I actually going to find these? And for the most part, probably not. But for the most part, if they're records that I really want to get again, like, I'm pretty sure I can find them again at some point in my life.
Right.
I was not convinced that I could find my wife again.
Right. Regardless, I hope your wedding was awesome, because...
Oh, it was, man. And I got the pictures and a DVD to prove it.
There
and
you go.
And still have the wife, too.
Yes.
And so, you know, I think that would be one thing. Like, if she had split afterwards, you know, that'd be... very different.
That'd be a novel.
Very different.
That'd be like the sequel to High Fidelity. It'd be a great novel.
That'd be no fidelity. Right. No, that would. Well,
oh, there you go.
Literally.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
I don't know.
Back on topic. Besides radio, one of the things I wanted to ask you about was your relationship to summer and music. Every year I do a summer song segment for the blog. This year I'm building it into the podcast as much as possible. And I'm wondering, especially as someone who's lived in many different parts of the country, what are your different associations with summer?
Man. Part of my connection to summer is very much based off of memories of summer as opposed to kind of actualities of summer. And so a lot of that is going to be based off of, you know, growing up in Atlanta, and, you know, being a kid in Atlanta in the 1970s, 1980s, and having it be exceptionally hot, and just how being in a place that is overwhelmingly hot affects everything that you do, and especially like really makes you appreciate when the sun goes down. And that is slightly different than the kind of summer in Madison. Like in Madison, when you go through a real winter, and then you get the summer, like you appreciate it. And it gets quite hot and pretty humid up there. But like you, after 2 feet of snow or whatever, like you can't complain.
Yeah.
And then the Bay Area, I mean, the Bay Area is funny just because, you know, you're lucky if you get like a week, you know, sometimes you get two. Remember those 2 weeks of summer, you know, like you'd get like maybe a week where just out of the blue for a week, it'd be like 90 degrees. And then like another week in late August or September. And the rest was just like straight 70s. And kind of up to this point, it's not quite summer yet when we're doing this, but you know, it's kind of, it has a feeling of kind of like a Bay Area summer right now in Los Angeles.
Right.
And Los Angeles is a little, you know, when it gets warm, it reminds me a little bit more of home. And so, you know, in some ways this is certainly my home. It's been my home for, you know, a little while now, and living in California for, you know, well over a decade. So, I'm more used to it, but I think that a lot of kind of the feeling of summer, a lot of it is about kind of remembrance, maybe something closer to nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I mean, I think that's what summer songs invoke is that they are inseparable from some dynamic of nostalgia, because so much of how the relationship between summer and music is wrapped up is they both heighten that sensation. Why don't we play one of the three songs you brought us in today? I'll let you pick which one you want to start with.
Why don't we start with Love.
Hummingbirds hum, what do they hum? Little girls wearing pigtails in the morning. In the morning, la da da, da 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 da. Merry go round, going round, pinning all over the town in the morning, in the morning. Summertime's here, and look, oh, there are flowers everywhere in the morning.
That was Love with the Good Humor Man Sees Everything Like This. Why this song for one of your summer songs?
Well, this is a song, and the way you originally kind of put it to me, I think, was something like songs that remind you of summer or something along those lines.
Yeah, right.
And this song, whenever summer is around the horizon, this song kind of floats into my mind, and for several years, when it literally is the kind of summer moment, I tend to play it or start off a show with it, and it has this quality to it. At least 9/10 of the song has this really just kind of floating and very wistful quality to both the sound and these images that Arthur Lee evokes in the lyrics. Something that apparently, at least as I've heard it, that he wrote in 1966 or 1967, just kind of sitting on the lawn at Dorsey High here in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. where he went to school, mm-hmm. And just trying to think of, you know, nice, pretty thoughts. And so, like, the song is filled with these just kind of very random in a way, but also very much thoughts that are very evocative of a kind of feel of summer, and just something about that, like you listen to that song and it's like you can feel like a different breeze in the air, mm. just all the different kind of ways that summer feels, particularly in the early morning hours before it gets too hot, mm. just that kind of nice breezy aspect of summer seems to come across in that song until you get to the end. And I never really know what is up with that ending, which I would imagine, based off of 67, had to have been some kind of tape manipulation, but it almost sounds like somebody had the reel-to-reel, like a DJ, and like had the reel-to-reel and just was kind of like, just like messing with it. And I the first time I heard that, I'd heard Arthur Lee in Love growing up, but I don't think I really like paid attention until the High Fidelity movie came out that had My Little Red Book, Love's version of My Little Red Book, in the closing credits, and I was like crazy for it. And then the Forever Changes reissue came out the mm-hmm. following year. Mm-hmm. This is about 10 years ago. And then just was head over heels in love with that,
yeah.
that sound. And just that, when I heard that song the first time, I thought something happened to the CD player. I had it on a CD, and found it on vinyl, and the same thing happened. So clearly that wasn't it. It's almost like you know, the kind of the same way that you know, summer has this kind of feeling of, you know, very, very easygoing, but in some instances that easygoingness is kind of a front for something that might be a little bit more sinister. And like the way those strings get manipulated at the end, it almost seems like, you know, almost like a car crash or something. And so it's kind of like those both aspects that, you know, it's awfully sweet, but at the same time, there's something a little bit off
at the end. Interesting.
At the end. And so I don't know if that's kind of a nice metaphor for how the summer works in totality, but it always seems like, you know, summers often seem like they don't go quite the way that we would have planned.
Oh, they never do.
Yeah. You know, and that song is kind of very much like that.
Yeah. All right, what next?
Next, why don't we go with Althea and Donna and Uptown Top Ranking.
All right.
See me in my heels and ting. Them checks are we hip and ting. True, them no know and ting. We have them going empty. Now pop, no style. All strictly roots. Now pop, no style. All strictly roots. See me on the road and you no call out to me. Do you see me in my pants and tink? See me in my altar back. See me give you heart attack. Give me little bass, make me wine out my waist. Uptown Top Ranking. See me in my Benz and ting. Dolly true constant spring. Them checks say we come from Cosmo Spring. But the true them no know and ting. Them no know say we top ranking. Uptown Top Ranking. Check out we jamming and ting. Love is all I bring. In a khaki suit and ting. Now pop no style. I strictly roots. Now pop no style. I strictly roots. Watch out we chuck it and ting. In a khaki suit and ting. Love is all I bring. In a khaki suit and ting. Now pop no style. A strictly roots. Now pop no style. A strictly roots.
That was Althea and Donna with Uptown Top Ranking, which I've always liked because it uses one of my favorite rhythms by Alton Ellis, which is his version in turn of Gonna Take a Miracle. And as we were just talking during the musical break, that there's a lot of versions that have been made over that particular rhythm. Yeah. Rhythm, I should say. Yeah. Why this song?
There have been a lot of versions that use that. Mm. There's a Marsha Aitken version that I think most people kind of ride the rhythm over. That was the case with the Trinity DJ song that came out that the Althea and Donna was a response to.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the versions that came since, I guess Sean Paul was maybe the most recent person to kind of resurrect that rhythm and make a hit out of it. Primarily using those vocals or kind of the background from Marsha Aitken.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like a rhythm that's been done to death, like real rock or slang tang.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got these other kind of reference points, but there's also a very kind of a kind of exuberance that I think is best expressed in the summer than other months. I feel like comes through in this song, particularly this version of it, because the version that's on the 12-inch record that they put out, the full-length record, is different than the single version. The musical accompaniment is a little bit different, and but that initial version that they recorded with I think Joe Gibbs just has like the extra energy in it, and like a little extra playfulness in the way that they kind of talk back to Trinity. And I just think that it's such a great rhythm, and there's so many great lines, even though 90% of what they're saying, listening to a ton of Jamaican music and like feeling like I have a good, you know, grasp of that patois, I just, you know, there's just like a lot of lines that I'm like clueless on. I only like maybe like a couple years ago realized that they were saying in me khaki suit and ting. I was convinced for years that it was car keys suit and ting, and I had like this image of this woman, you know, like showing up someplace, you know, with a car and like suitcase and like all her stuff, and it's like a totally different message.
Right.
It was that was more kind of the response to Trinity in the three piece suit and there in the khaki suit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just there's like so many great lines in it, the no pop no style line. And it's a song that instantly when you hear it. You know, it's one of a handful, maybe a couple handful of songs that you hear it and it's impossible to feel bad. Impossible not to smile during those three plus minutes of that song. It's just such a great rhythm.
One thing, I said mistakenly it was Elton Ellis is going to take a miracle. You were right. It's actually I'm Still in Love With You, I think, is the original, at least Ellis's version, if there was a preceding rhythm from that. I'm sure some of
that. I think his was the first version.
I do too. Yeah.
Which
is, I mean, great. I mean, this all of Ellis's stuff in that era is so just airtight. Good.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know.
In fact, let's take a listen.
Jamaican music in general, I mean, it's just one of the great success stories in modern music making. Because when you pick up those records, like when you find the records and you see who's playing on the records, you realize that it's basically like the same 20-25 dudes on the records playing the rhythms. And there's a host of different people from all over Jamaica providing the vocals. And it's just amazing how much, even on the exact same, like literally exact same rhythm, how much a different vocalist, a different producer, just slight change in the tempo just completely changes a song. And yeah, I mean, it's just, that's one of many that I probably could have chosen that really evoke a certain kind of feel in the summer. But that one, I think, you know, is literally top ranking.
Right. All right, your last song was Dominoes by Donald Byrd and the Blackbirds off of Places and Spaces, which I thought was kind of interesting because to me, if I had to think of a definitive summer song, I would have gone with the title cut, which has, you know, more of that loose, laid-back feel, but you chose Dominoes. Why?
This is actually, I think, the one that was like the easiest and the toughest, because when I think of kind of like a summery kind of feel to a song, like that production style from the Mizell Brothers kind of pops into my head. But Dominoes to me, from all those songs and really from a lot of those various songs the Mizell Brothers put together, I think just that the sentiment, the lyrical sentiment, in addition to, you know, just the great kind of sound of the song, but the lyrical sentiment to me is also this thing that really, really speaks to that kind of hopefulness that's in summer that's really not in any other season. Mm-hmm. For me, there's a lot of nostalgia wrapped up in that Mizell Brothers sound that like instantly kind of transports you to kind of childhood feelings, but is very nicely kind of wrapped into adolescence and young adulthood and present adulthood. Mm-hmm. And it just, to me, it's one of those great, like, timeless sounds to come out of the 1970s.
Right. And let's take a listen to it. This is Dominoes by Donald Byrd from Places and Spaces. Dominoes by Donald Byrd. My guest is Michael Barnes from KPFK's The Melting Pot, which I forgot to mention earlier is on Sunday afternoons from 4 to 6 p.m. Of course, being the age we're in, if you miss the show live, you can always go to the Melting Pot. Is it meltingpotblog.com?
Meltingpotblog.com.
And you can catch his show archived there as well for you lazy, convenience-addicted people out there who can't be bothered to catch a radio show live. But
if you're enjoying your summer or your memories of summer too much, it'll be there, but it's always better to catch it live.
Right. Well, Michael, thank you so much for coming through today.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. It's a pleasure.
Dominoes.
Sidebar is a production of Oliver Wang and soul-sides.com.